Hey, this is Keith. I'm the pastor at Truth Community Church, and I want to thank you for checking out our podcast today. Wherever you're listening from, I hope this message leads you to discover Jesus, connect with people, and serve the world. If you want to take your next step, visit us online at truthcommunity.org. Now, let's dive into the message.
Today, we're continuing Super Zeros, and we're a part three of this series we started at the beginning of the month. And hey, if you're new, if you're visiting today, we're going to play a little catch-up, so don't feel out of the loop. We're so thankful that you're here. In fact, in the chair in front of you, there's an orange Connect card. If you would take a minute to fill that out, we want to give you a gift before you leave. Just say thank you for investing your time with us. But don't feel like, what happened in part one or two? We're going to talk about it. We started this series because if you've ever attempted to maybe read from this book yourself, maybe you've had an experience where you read and you felt like, man, I can't do anything that I see happening in here. I'm not as strong as the people that are in here. And I grew up in church culture. So for me, I remember hearing, you know, Sunday school. Have you heard that before? Like going to Sunday school class and hearing these stories of these people. And they were always seemed like these great superheroes. And they did amazing things. And we believe that they did amazing things, but it was really God who did the amazing things through them. And if you've ever had an experience where you went to read and you walked away and closed the book and said, I could never do that, that's actually a good response. We should say, I can never do it. And that's why we need Jesus. We need him as our Savior. We need God. And we're learning that when God calls us to do something, he actually equips us to do what he called us to do. And I love that, because if you have a passion or a vision or a dream in your heart and you say, man, God has called me to do this thing, but it seems so big, I don't know that I could do it. That's a good thing, because it means that God is going to come through, that God is going to equip you when he calls you. And last week, we discovered through the story of Gideon that when we have our weaknesses, they don't disqualify us from God. They're actually a really good stage for God to stand up on and say, man, now that you recognize how weak you are, I can do something great in your life. Because if you remember the story of Gideon, he had 32,000 people in his army, and God shrunk it down to 300, 1% of what he started with. And God said, that's because I want to come through in this story. And so that's kind of what we're doing here. We're calling these guys Super Zeros because although they're good and we respect them and love them, we recognize that Jesus is the one superhero in our lives and in this world. And we look to him and we celebrate him. So today we're going to talk about a man named Jephthah. And I'm telling you, I'm going to stutter over that word a couple times. It's hard to say and spell. It's J-E-P-H-T-H-A-H. All right, so it's hard, so just forgive me if I say it weird, okay? Can we do that? Can we be friends today? All right, thank you for that. So we're going to talk about Jephthah and discover what he teaches us about being a super zero and about our lives. And before we dive in there, I want to talk about my brother-in-law, actually. And I cleared this with him, so don't worry. He's coming to the 11. I said, hey, bro, I'm going to talk about you tomorrow. You good with that? He's like, all right. And this is why, because my brother-in-law is so good at getting deals, it amazes me. It completely blows my mind. So he recently graduated from college, and what he does is he goes around yard selling on the weekends, and then he flips it on eBay, and that's just what he does. And I've witnessed him in action before when we went to this giant outdoor flea market in South Carolina. And it's amazing because I'm nothing like what he is, and I admire it. So for me, it's like if I have to talk you down in price, I'd rather just pay more for it. People like that, it's like, I don't want to get involved in this. I can't confront. I can't go back and forth here. Just, you're telling me it's 50. I can see that it's worth 10, but here's $50 because that's not who I am. And now my brother-in-law, Richie, he does this. I mean, he has no problem just talking in a kind way, but saying, I'll give you this for it. And he always gets what he wants. And then he'll walk in and be like, I could sell this for $100, bro. It was only $1. I'm like, dude, how did you do that? How did you talk yourself into that and talk them into it? And I love that about him. And now as you think about that, I'm sure that we could split the room right now, and there'll be some people that land on this side, and it's like, yeah, I could definitely, I'm good with words. I could, not just to get what you want, but you're good with conversation, and you can talk to people, and you can ask the right questions, and you can engage people the right way, And you can make a deal. You guys see that, what is it, Deal or No Deal's coming back or some of the cases, right? Like you can is that the show? You can do that. You can make those deals. You can talk yourself into things. You can talk others into it. You can get out of some pretty messy situations with just a little bit of smooth talking. And then there's others of us that's kind of where I land. It's like, I'm not very good at confronting you, and I'm just going to go with what you're saying, and I'm probably going to get taken advantage of, but it's okay. Here's my money. Sign me up. But no matter where we land horizontally, okay, that's when we interact with each other. I believe that all of us, every single person, whether today this is your first time, second time, or maybe you've never been to church before in your life, I'm sure there's been a time in your life already, and if not, it'll happen, so trust me on this, where you try to get a bargain out of God. Okay, so let's think vertically here. And I'll tell you, I mean, I can go into story after story where I have tried to convince God to do what I need him to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, we try to get a bargain out of him. We say, well, God, I mean, you should do this for me, and I need you to come through. And maybe you call that prayer, and maybe before you leave church, you drop a little couple extra dollars in the bucket, and you say, well, this will work in the future. I'll just leave that there for God just to remind him. But you know what that's like, and although we might not be good at bargaining horizontally, when it comes to the vertical relationship that we have with God, there is something in us that wants to go there. We want to talk God into doing things for us. We want to talk him into giving us what we most need in our lives. And that's what we're going to discover from the life of Jephthah today. Now, here's why this matters. Because if this actually works, think about it. If we could actually come up with, whether it's from this book or maybe you read a prayer or you talk to a pastor or a person, imagine if we could actually come up with the formula to get God to do what we need him to do. I mean, don't you want to know what that is? I would love to know if it works. And on the other side, I would also love to know if it doesn't work, because why am I going to waste my time doing something that doesn't actually produce a result? You know what I'm saying? Your time is valuable. It's in fact, I think it's the greatest resource we have. We can always make more money. We can't make more time. Our time is important. And so think about it. If you believe that you can somehow convince God to do what you want him to do, and you're spending all this time doing things or praying prayers or giving or whatever that looks like, all in an effort to get God to give you something, well, if you're right, that's great. But if you're wrong, it's wasting time. So today I want us to discover what that looks like. Can we bargain with God? Can we live in such a way that gets him to show up in a bigger way in our life and give us what we're asking for? And that's why I'm grateful for Jephthah, because Jephthah teaches us something about that. Now, let me give you some history here. Where we're reading from today is in the first part of what we call the Bible. The Bible is just a collection of books. There's 66 different pieces of writing in this book. We bound it up around 330 AD, and we called it the Bible. But we're reading from the first part of it, which is, you might say, ancient history. This is specifically Israel's history. Now, don't let me bore you with the historical stuff. I just want to give you context. At this time period, their culture was very, very different than ours. Okay, not just because we're reading from the Bible, but because if you open up any global history book or any ancient piece of literature, you've got to know, okay, I'm reading from a time that is different. I want to set the stage, because some of what we're going to read today seems like, that's crazy. You ever done that in the Bible? You open up, that's crazy. I'm going to close that. That can't work. And it might not, because what we're reading is descriptive, not prescriptive. We're reading a descriptive account of the life of Jephthah and the people of Israel. Now, this time period, Israel had no other leaders in their life. There was no kings. If you've ever heard of King David or Saul or any of those, there was no kings yet. Moses, if you've heard of Moses, he's dead and gone at this point. There's no true leader over Israel. So God establishes judges. And judges were these people who would serve the people of Israel. They would instruct the people of Israel. They would lead the people of Israel. And then there would be a new judge. And there was 12 different judges. And you heard Pastor Jonathan, next week he's going to talk about Samson, the strong judge, the last judge that Israel had. And today we're talking about Jephthah. Now the reason why God had to set up judges was because Israel kept doing the same thing over and over. Israel would abandon God, God would bring in an enemy, and Israel would cry out for help, and God would send a judge, and the judge would deliver them and set them free. And you heard in Pastor Jonathan's video there, he pointed out that this is a story of God's grace, because God continues to show favor to the people of Israel. I mean, they break God's commands, they hurt him, they sin, and they cry out for help, and God says, all right, I'm going to bring you another leader, I'm going to bring you another judge. Now, what's really funny, and we're not going to read, I'm going to encourage you to read it. In Judges chapter 10, when Israel cries out for help to God, God has some fun with them, and I love it, because they cry out, and at this point, they've gone through seven judges. I mean, this is seven times over. Keep sinning. God help us. All right, I'll help you again. Keep sinning. God help us. All right, I'll help you again. And in Judges 10, there's this comical conversation that God has where God says to them, you know what, why don't you go ask the other gods for help? Isn't that awesome that God says that to them? Don't you ever want to say that to your kids sometimes? Go ask your dad, right? Just go ask someone else. Go ask someone else for help. You know, you love these gods, and he has some fun with them. He shows them, he's trying to teach them, the gods you're chasing after, they can't help you. What if you actually trust them? Don't you see that they're not there to help you? And he has this fun with them. And then we get to this guy named Jephthah. Now, the reason why, this is important, the reason why God said that, go help the gods you trust to help you, is he was trying to teach them something. You can't expect my blessing if you're not living out my principles. That's what he was teaching the people of Israel. And I've done that before. Have you ever asked God in your relationship, God, bless my relationship, make it healthy, but you're not honoring and loving that person? It doesn't work. You know it doesn't work that way. God, just bless my marriage. Yeah, but you haven't shown your spouse how much you love them in a while, and that's my principle, love them. God, just give me more, give me more. Yeah, but you're not being generous. If I give you more, you're going to spend it on yourself. So God is trying to teach the people of Israel, I want to be your God, because these gods, they can't really do anything good for you. So in comes Jephthah. Are you ready to read it? Judges chapter 11, verse 1. Now Jephthah of Gilead was a great warrior. He was the son of Gilead, but his mother was a prostitute. Now that's important. The reason why the author of Judges gives us detail is because the details matter. So Jephthah is the son of Gilead. That's great. That's an Israelite clan. That's an Israelite leader. That's a good name. Okay, you're a Gileadite. That's awesome. But your mom is a prostitute. Now look at what happens here. And I think we're going to be able to relate to this. Gilead's wife also had several sons. And when these half-brothers grew up, they chased Jephthah off the land. And look at what they say. You will not get any of our father's inheritance, they said, for you are the son of a prostitute. Now, I don't know if you've experienced this before, but have you ever had it when someone finds out your family history and they find out your name or they find out something about you or about your family and suddenly there's a little disconnect between you and them? Like everything was cool until they found out that detail about your life. Oh, you did that. Oh, you went there. Oh, you were with him. Oh, those were your parents. This still exists today. And look how thousands of years ago, humanity we're still treating each other the same way. And Jephthah now, although he's the son of Gilead, although he's got this strength in his name, his brothers or his half-brothers say, yeah, but you have no part in our inheritance. You don't have a right here because of your history, because of your past, because of who's in your family. So you just get out of here. Now, here's the important thing. You were designed for community. Every single person, we are designed for relationship. God made us that way. The one thing God said in the beginning that was not good was isolated person. This guy's by himself. Adam is by himself. It's not good. He needs community with other people. So when Jephthah's brothers chase him away, Jephthah does what we do. We look for community. You can't exist outside of community. So verse 3 said that Jephthah fled from his brothers and lived in the land of Tob. And soon, I like this, he had a band of worthless rebels following him. Right? I love that description there. So Jephthah is chased away from his family, but because all of us are designed for community and because you're going to have people in your life that you connect with and associate with, Jephthah finds a band of worthless rebels. Now, let me explain what that really means. Jephthah became, in his day, the godfather. That's it. We're going to see it. But that's what happens because Jephthah has a leadership quality. He is the son of Gilead, and he's designed to be a leader. And when he gets a band of worthless rebels around him, he sets up his own mafia. Okay, this is the first reference to the mob. I'm telling you, it wasn't Israel, it was Italian. The whole book is Italian, trust me. I know I don't look it, but I'm 50%. but here's Jephthah, and he literally sets up as a mob boss. You're going to see that. And he just has these people that just follow him, and he's got his band of worthless men that are around him because he's a leader, and he could do good, but now he's associating with other people, and it's just, well, I'm going to lead. I'm going to do what I'm called to do. Now, here's what's interesting. Israel is still being afflicted by their enemies. Remember, the last conversation God has was, why don't you ask your gods to help you out? And so now the people of Israel, this is great, they all come to Jephthah after he sets up his little business, knocking on doors and making sure people pay, and oh, you didn't pay. They come to him, they recognize his band, they recognize his leadership qualities, and they actually ask him for help. Look at this. In verse 6, the elders said, come and be our commander. Help us fight the Ammonites. But Jephthah said to them, this is why I'm telling you, just picture the Godfather accent in your head. I won't try to do it. But are you the ones who hated me and drove me away from my father's house? And now you come here uninvited, right? It's there. Why do you come now when you're in trouble? And he's saying, look, hold on a second. You chased me away. You didn't want anything to, oh, now you're coming to my doorstep, and now you need my help. And here's where we see Jephthah's ability to bargain come into the story. Jephthah's ability to make sure he gets what he wants out of the deal. And he's going to do it horizontally because some of us are good at that. And so he starts talking to them. And he says, because we need you, the elders replied. If you lead us into battle against the Ammonites, we will make you ruler over all the people of Gilead. And Jephthah said to the elders, let me get this straight. If I come with you, and if the Lord gives me victory over the Ammonites, will you really make me ruler over all the people? Jephthah's asking the question that you and I ask when we start to bargain with people. What's in it for me? How do I get a deal out of this? How do I make sure I get mine? You want me to do something for you? Well, I'm going to make sure you do something for me. What's in it for me? So you're telling me if I do this, if I bring my guys into this and we get the victory, you're going to set me up as leader? Is that what we're saying? And they agree to it. And Jephthah smooth talks his way into this great deal. I mean, this is a rags to riches story that we see here. He goes from being chased away by his family to now they're coming back to him and saying, we need your help. If you need my help, it's going to cost you something. Let me bargain with you. Let me get a deal out of this. And they agree to it. And now all of a sudden, Jephthah is not living on the outskirts of town. I mean, he is set up and he's being respected and honored and people are coming to him. So when we look at this, we're going to keep score today. Jephthah is now 1-0. He has won one of his conversations. And you know what happens when you win in a conversation? You want to have it again, don't you? When you get a deal, it fires you up. I got a deal on this one. Maybe I can make a deal on the next one. Maybe I can make something come of this. Maybe I'm good at talking. I'm good at getting what I want. So I'm going to keep living life this way. Let's see what I can do. So Jephthah, going in with a victory, he now turns his attention to the Ammonite king. He figures, if I convince the leaders of Israel to give me what I want, maybe I can figure this out with words when it comes to this Ammonite king. And it says in verse 12 that he sends a message to the king of Ammon asking, why have you come out to fight against my land? So he begins his message with, let's get it on the table. Why are you fighting against us? Man, I just want peace. Bring the cannolis in. Let's just have a good time now. There's no need for fighting. And we're not going to read it all, but verses 13 to 28 in this chapter, you go into Jephthah's entire mouthful speech. You've seen this before. You tried this. I tried this. Years ago, Amy and I were shopping for a car, and we went to a car dealership. And I'm not going to say names and all, but we went to a car dealership, and we spent 6 hours. I know we're crazy, but we spent 6 hours there passing the paper. You know what it's like if you bought a car. I'm telling you, I would say I'm leaving. I would go outside. I'm like, I really don't want to leave it. And my wife is very sensible. She's like, we should leave. It's like, we've been here a few. No, babe, I'm going to get a deal out of this. We just got to play some hardball. Don't you worry. I'm not walking away without a car. And you know what happened 6 hours later, right? I didn't get no car, right? But I tried my best with as many words as I could come up with to convince that person, give me what I want. Come on, let's lower the payment. Let's increase this. What if you throw that in and we might have kids someday. They could work here. Whatever it takes, just give me the car and we'll figure it out. I want to make this deal. Come on, stay with me. And it didn't work out for me. And right here, after this entire chunk of his message, and he's going into, I mean, you got to read it for yourself. He's going into all this detail. He's telling them, no, it wasn't us who started it. You started it. God gave us this land, and you should understand that God gave it to us, and so it's ours. We're not here to take your land. We just want to live within our borders. Going on, it's a monologue because there's no pick up the phone. He's just sending this message off, and I love the response of the king when he gets it. Verse 29, but the king of Ammon paid no attention to Jephthah's message. How great is that? Jephthah, you just spent all this time trying to bargain. You spent all this time trying to smooth talk your way into your deal. And the king gets in and says, I don't even care. Like, hit the delete button. I don't want to see it. It doesn't matter to me. So let's keep score now. We've got Jephthah is 1-1. He's won one and he's lost one. But he's only been operating on a horizontal plane. Now he's going to set his sights up, and he's going to try to do what I'm telling you I've tried before over and over. And if we could share stories in this space right now, you could talk to the person in your row, and they will tell you, yep, I've tried to bargain with God before. I've tried to get him to do what I want before. I've prayed the prayers. I've done everything I could think of to get him to come through. And Jephthah now at this point, he's getting ready to make that move. And he misses something so important, so important. And so now after he's won one and he's lost one, he's great at making deals. The next verse says, at that time, the Spirit of the Lord came upon Jephthah, and he went throughout the land of Gilead and Manasseh, including Mizpah and Gilead, and from there he led an army against the Ammonites. So don't get tripped up on all those places. That would be like, you ever talk to someone that's not from Long Island, say, where are you in, Islip or Patchogue? You know that? Like, they don't know what our names are. That's all it is there, okay? So don't, it's just he goes around and starts finding everyone from the towns and says, let's build an army now. Let's go to fight. And then he does this. He bargains. And this is heartbreaking. And Jephthah made a vow to the Lord. He said, if you give me victory, you said this, God, if you come through, if you heal her, if you help me financially, if you, whatever it is, just if you give me victory, God, okay, here it is. If you give me victory, then I will give to the Lord whatever comes out of my house to meet me when I return in triumph. And I will sacrifice it as a burnt offering. So here's what he's doing. He is bargaining with God. And I need to give you some insight here. God didn't ask him to do this. We didn't skip around and say, well, where's the part where God said he expects a burnt offering for him to come through? It wasn't there. We didn't read it because it wasn't there. Okay, Jephthah on his own initiative figures, I'm really good with my words this way. Maybe I'll try using my words this way. And I think I know what God wants. I mean, God, you want a burnt offering. You want me to burn something for you. And the reason why, this is the culture, the reason why he thought God wanted that is because that's what all the other gods around him wanted. Remember, this is Israel at their worst. When we hear about Samson next week, I mean, you've got to come back because the story is incredible with what Israel and what Samson does. This is not Israel in their finest hour. This is them 8 judges deep into living the way the other people live. They have abandoned God's principles. God lays out a best plan for their life, and they go on the totally different path, and they just do what they want and expect all the blessings from this path. And at this point, when Jephthah makes this statement, I'll give you a burnt offering, he didn't get that from any of the law before him. He didn't get that from Moses. Moses never said it. And by the way, if you're going to fight someone, offer God a burnt offering, you might get them to show up for you. No, he didn't say that. And this is where you and I have to connect to this story, because you're going to find yourself in one of two places. You're either really good at proactively bargaining with God, or you're really good at reactively bargaining with God. And I'm telling you, this is what it looks like. Proactive bargaining with God. I had one friend who said, I need to increase my Jesus juju. I said, explain that to me. I never heard that term. Well, you know, it's like rubbing the magic lamp. Like, I just want to make sure that I'm good with God. So if I ever need him to come through for me, I've got enough set. This was his belief. And I walked with him, and I just encouraged him and prayed for him. I said, man, I don't know that it works that way. I don't know that you can show God your perfect church attendance record, and then when you need a promotion at work, you can wave that in front of him, your sticker chart, right? I love sticker charts. Or God, you know, I really need more money. And I mean, look at me. I've been giving every single week. I give. I'm generous. And I need you to come through now. That's proactive bargaining. That's you making sure there's enough ammunition in the clip so you can say, when I got to fire a shot, I've got bullets there. I've got my giving bullet, my serving bullet, my showing up bullet. All of those things that, I don't know if I should use guns and bullets as the best illustration, but all those things, when you go to shoot God down, you say, this is exactly why. This is why you should come through for me. That's proactive. Now, I don't land there, but you know where your pastor and your friend tends to land is the reactive. Reactive bargaining is when something doesn't go the way I thought it was supposed to go, and suddenly, I mean, I'm angry with God. Are you kidding me? All I do for you and you're going to do this for me? I mean, I show up, I serve, I give, I help, I love people, and this is the thanks I get. Why do we have to struggle? Why is it so hard? Why isn't he healed? Why doesn't she know what's best for all of these reactive bargaining tactics where we stand there as Jephthah and we say, God, come on, I'm going to do this for you. I scratch your back, you scratch mine. I mean, that's how this thing works, right? I'm going to talk you into what I need. Now here's the part that breaks my heart. Jephthah wins. Jephthah goes out that day with his army and he wins the war. And it says in verse 34 that when Jephthah returned home to Mizpah, his daughter came out to meet him, playing on a tambourine and dancing for joy. She was his one and only child. He had no other sons and daughters. And you know the vow that Jephthah made moments before. God, the first thing that comes out of my house, I'm going to offer as a burnt sacrifice to you. The first thing, if I get home and there's victory, God, whatever comes out of my house, because he's a bargainer, because he's a smooth talker, because he believes the best way to get ahead in life is to rely on his own abilities and to rely on his own strength and to use his own words to get what he needs from God. And could you imagine, parents, you can connect with this really fast. Could you imagine he gets home and the first thing he sees is his smiling face of his baby girl, his only child. And he tells her what he's done. He tells her about the vow. And what she then asks him to do, and this is cultural, so let me explain it. She says, Father, can I just go off for 2 months with my friends into the mountains and mourn the fact that I'm going to die a virgin? Now, I'm going to explain why that's important. And he agrees, and he says, fine, take your 2 months and go. And then in verse 39, it says that when she returned home, her father kept the vow he had made, and she died a virgin. Now, I can see your thought bubbles. It's a gift that I have as a communicator. We're all wondering, did this really happen? I mean, really? That's the kind of God that you want me to believe in today? A God that demanded a child to be sacrificed? Well, let me answer that in a couple ways. First of all, we don't know if it actually happened. And I know it's not the answer you want, but that's the only answer I can give you. Because as I studied and I looked through commentaries and even talked to other pastors about this text, there are people on both sides of what happened here. So there are people that say, he might have burnt her. He might have sacrificed her. And I'll tell you why in just a second. And there are others who will say, we don't think he sacrificed her through a burnt offering. We believe that he more so dedicated her to the Lord, almost as a nun in a convent. And here's why they believe that. Because why did she spend 2 months going to mourn the fact that she would die a virgin if only to be burnt? Does that make sense? Like, why am I going to go and cry if I'm going to die anyway? And so a lot of scholars will say, we believe that when she came back, he didn't follow through with the burnt offering, but he burnt something else in her place, but now she was dedicated to the Lord. Now, you and I might say, well, that's a whole lot better. Yes and no. Because in this culture, remember, he has no other kids. It is very important for you to produce a male offspring in this culture. This is thousands of years ago. This isn't a Bible thing. This is just a human thing. It is very important for you to produce a male offspring to carry on your tribe's name. If women could not produce children, if they were barren or if they never had a son, it was as good as they were dead. I know it doesn't feel that way, but in this culture, there was no value or worth for you if you couldn't create a male. You know that from history books. Who was that, King Henry or whatever? Just wife after wife because he wanted the male. That's this. So don't just think, well, that's not as bad. No, it's devastating. And the reason why he may have actually sacrificed his daughter as a burnt offering is because that is exactly what every other god around him demanded that the people do to appease the gods. But the God that he knew never demanded that. The God of Israel was so against human sacrifice. You got to read it for yourself all throughout the law. God even told the people of Israel, when you enter the land I'm going to give you, don't follow their gods and don't do their practices. There was this one God named Molech, and the people, all who followed him, said the only way to appease the gods was human sacrifice, human sacrifice. And God values life. Hear that today. God has never asked a human to be sacrificed. You know who he sacrificed? His own son. That is the gospel in this. We look at Jephthah taking this stance and saying, I've got to get God's approval by sacrificing my one and only daughter. No, God looks at humanity and says, you're going to get what you need from me, not because you're going to sacrifice your one and only child, but God says, I'll do it through Jesus. Do you see the beauty there and the hope there? And I know it's a weird feeling we have in us right now, but here's the heartbreaking part. I hate this. Jephthah never had to make that vow. Jephthah never had to say that. You know why? Because it was not God's request. It was Jephthah's foolishness that made that happen. God never said, Jephthah, if you want me to come through for you, if you want me to provide for you, I'm going to need something in return. Let's start making a deal here, Jephthah. He never said that. It was Jephthah's own foolishness. You know why I say it's foolish? Because he missed the gift that God actually gave him before he went out. Did you see it? Look at the first line of verse 29. Then the Spirit of the Lord came on Jephthah. It should have been over there, guys. Come on. The very Spirit of God, the presence of God, we say today, the Holy Spirit came upon Jephthah. All he had to do was walk out and fight the war in God's Spirit, and the victory was his because it was based on God's Spirit. But Jephthah decided, don't think that's good enough. I think I'm going to trust in my own works and my own abilities. And so Jephthah makes a vow to the Lord. God never said you had to do that. In fact, God went a step above and gave you, Jephthah, he gave you his Spirit. What are you doing, man? Why are you trying to talk yourself into something God gave you? And that's our teaching point today, and that's why this matters. You cannot talk yourself into what God wants to give you. And guys, we believe that salvation is free, that it is a gift, as Paul says, it is a gift of God. It is by his grace that he has saved us. It is not that you can work hard and you can proactively get God on your side to save you and come through for you by you showing up to church, by you giving money, by you serving. All of those things, they are not a means to salvation. They are a result of salvation. You see the difference there? We don't show up and we don't love people and serve our community and be generous and do all these things so that God will love us. We do it because God loves us. And I want you to hear that today because I know it. I can land here. For so many of us, we can get so frustrated with God because we think he's not doing what we expect him to do. Because we think somehow we buy our own salvation and we buy our rights. And God, come on, look at all I'm doing. No, but God never asked it of you. God never said to do it this way. You're making a vow when you don't have to. God has given you his Spirit. God has given you his Son, Jesus. And I'm telling you how different your life is, how different it is when you stop trying to convince God to give you what he just wants to give you. And it doesn't mean you stop praying. It means your prayers start to change a little. You start to say, thank you, God, for already giving me everything I need in Jesus. It doesn't mean you stop giving it. In my life, it means I give more because I say, God, I can't outgive you. You've given me so much in Jesus. It doesn't mean you say, well, I'm not going to love him. I'm not going to serve. There's nothing in there for me. No, you already got what you need in Jesus. You don't have to do it to get. You do it because you've been given. And that's the heart of the gospel. And that's what Jephthah missed out in his story. He was so quick to make a vow. And if you would be honest today, maybe you're quick at making vows to God. Maybe you're quick at looking through your life and saying, God, I will if you. I'll do it if you do it. And the problem there is when we try to win our own salvation, we have to maintain our own salvation. You know what guilt and shame feels like, I'm sure. And that's why sometimes we do something and God's showing up and it's all sunshine and we're enjoying life and man, this is great. And then the clouds come through and we get all bent out of shape and say, God, I don't understand. Why is it going like this now? Well, that's because you're living out of vows. You're not living out of God's Spirit for you. And no matter who you are today or what you believe, you are invited to know that God. Not the God that says, I need sacrifice. I need vows. The God that says, I'll sacrifice my Son for you. I love you. I want to do this for you. That's the God that Jephthah had in his life. It's the God he left and he chased after another God. So in my relationship with Amy, I've been using this phrase. We started dating, we were 15, so almost 15 years now. I've been using this phrase for a while and it's this, can you just, you ever say that before to someone? Can you, babe, scratch my back? Can you just scratch my back here? Hey, babe, can you just make me a sandwich? You know, it just kind of rolls off the tongue in my, can you just do this? Can you just do this for me? And I'm telling you, when I thought about that phrase and I thought about how I use it horizontally, I said, man, I use the same thing with God. God, can you just come through? Can you just? And think about it in your own life. Maybe you have your little phrase that you say, man, that's what I say. And I want to flip it today. I believe that God would say to us, can you just trust me? I think that's the question that God is asking of us today. The question that Jephthah could have answered. Jephthah, can you just trust me? Because I'm going to give you my Spirit when you go out to fight this war. And his answer was, no, God, I can't trust you. I'm going to try to do this my own way. And the results were devastating. And so here's the question for us today. Can you just trust Jesus? Can you just come to a place where you say, I tried it my way and the results weren't good. And I'm so filled with guilt and shame and I so want to know this God and I want to celebrate him. And I realize now that I'm bargaining and I'm pleading and I'm not trusting. I'm not living out the gospel that says that Jesus is the means of my salvation. That Jesus is the only person who could take away my sin and rescue me. And so today we want to celebrate that Jesus is the one who saved us.